Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast, where we talk to foresters about how they are using digital technologies in their day-to-day forestry work. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Digital Forester Podcast. Today, I am joined by Andrew Davis. He's the product manager at Visual Forester. Andrew, how are you doing today?
Doing well. How are you, Kevin?
Not too bad. I was joking at the start. I saw like a skateboarder dude kind of go in the background. So where am I reaching you today?
We're in Bend, Oregon. And they got a little parking lot behind us, so you might see some cars going to a chiropractor, a skateboarder.
But you're living the urban life.
I suppose so. Yep.
Is that by design or intentional? You're an urban guy, but an urban forester guy or a digital forester living in the urban wilderness?
Yeah, I guess digital and urban wilderness, right? But I think Bend, it kind of is a good fit because all the outdoors are, I don't know, 15 minutes away and then endless national forest land. So
nice.
Enough population, but can get outside, you know?
For sure. So I did creep you on LinkedIn just to kind of get a bit more background about yourself. So I understand you went to Montana State University. You did a degree in environmental horticulture, landscape design. Does that even fit on a degree? Like I thought mine was long with environmental sciences, but that's a pretty long undergraduate degree. So maybe
we use the full 8.5 by 11 on it. Yeah. Wow. So it's all the way across.
Wow. So maybe to start things off, tell me what that area of science, do I dare say science, what that field is about?
Yeah. So it's basically a design degree with a specialty in horticulture. So I went to school for landscape design, landscape architecture. Some people know it. Studied that with a heavy focus on the horticulture side, so pretty solid science background compared to like more of an art focused degree. So I started off fully in that. I did landscape design professionally out of school for a little bit. And then COVID kind of hit. I moved all at the same time on the job market. Saw a job at the company I'm at now, making 3D digital trees. And I thought, you know, I think that kind of fits along with landscape design, I guess. I think I know plants, I can do that. And then I saw there's a little GIS element. I did kind of a GIS track within my degree. So I thought, okay, I can handle that too. And that's kind of how I ended up in forestry to start with. So yeah, degree is not forestry. It's fully design and plants.
So that sounds like a very interdisciplinary or multidisciplinary, I don't know which disciplinary program. If you had GIS, you had landscape analysis, you had horticulture, which maybe I'm old, plant science, when you say it's very sciencey there. But where did that interest stem from?
Yeah, that's a good question. I started off just purely in architecture, thinking I want to design buildings. And then I realized I like the outdoors more. Why am I designing concrete? So I switched my major to focus in landscape design, wanted to learn about plants, put some science in there. I think I always was more outdoors inclined. You know, as a kid, I was always outside in the woods behind my house, playing with my friends or helping my dad with the yard. So kind of, I think, a good natural fit in the end.
Yeah. So is Oregon home for you and you went to Montana, or is Montana home and you transplanted to the West Coast?
Neither. I've been slowly traversing. I grew up in Maine on the coast, and then I went to Montana, and then after Montana, I came to Oregon. So I just keep working my way west. So unless I move to the beach on the West Coast, I can't go much further.
Wow. And is family still out east then?
Family's still all out east. Yep.
So they're probably wondering what happened. What did we do to Andrew? He went to school and he never came back. He kept going west.
I kept on going west. Yeah, I like the bigger hills, so sticking with them.
That is true. That is very, very true. So we joked at the start, just as we said hello to each other. There's Visual Forester. There's IntelliFor. There's Alpine Land Information Services. So my $1 million question is, who do you work for?
Alpine Land Information Services, in short. But we're going to do the long answer. So I'm going to go back to kind of how Alpine was founded, because I think it makes a lot more sense if we kind of start at the origin. So our founder, Rand McCabe, was an actual logger out in the field for a good 15 years to start his career. And then he went to school. He got a degree in forestry and computer science and really saw a need to kind of combine the two, right? Because we need more technology in forestry. And hey, maybe the computer science world needs forestry too. I don't know. But that led him to create Alpine in 1989. So that's kind of how the whole company itself got started. Where we are today as a company, we operate on just a little under 2 million acres in the state of California, all on private industrial land. We're up to about 50 employees now, I believe. And our services kind of include anything from long-term forest planning, software development, data management services, field data collection, and carbon offset development. And of course, all of that under the Alpine umbrella is really more on the private side, private sector, not super public facing, right? We just work with our clients on that side. And then we kind of always had this kind of pet project on the side, right? Rand was really interested in the visual aspect, communicating the craft of forestry to a broader audience. One of our earlier products was GPI, which was a spatially explicit forest planning platform. So we really had the spatial information to kind of start playing with the visualization front, if you will. So in 1998, we actually started what would probably be the origin story of Visual Forester as a platform and product, kind of visualizing that 100-year rotation plan on a hillside. So you kind of see, the quilt mosaic change over time on the industrial land. And that sparked something even more of, hey, like we can do this. We can probably teach people using this tool. We can inform the public. Like this can be really valuable for our industry, right? Because at the time and still somewhat to this day, we more just have maps and spreadsheets to kind of communicate our craft outside of showing people, out in the forest what it looks like on the present day, the current condition, right? So we made that first attempt at it in 1998, made the little visual of the sustained yield plan. And then in 2004, the company created a platform called Visual Forester in the Classroom that was sold on a DVD. We sent it out to schools. Believe it or not, I was just on a call with a professor. Maybe it was a year or two ago that said someone else at that university had been using that Visual Forester for the Classroom tool with their students up until they removed PCs from their lab that took a disk anymore. So it
Wow.
had a little bit of staying power. It, teach students some different scenarios. They had, a few different inputs. They were able to make decisions on what block to cut at which time while still, obeying the California forest practice rules. So that was a good little tool. It was great. I've downloaded it again on my computer since and played around with it. It was pretty cool. But it was more of a 2D simulation looking like 3D, right? Like you were stuck with the one hillside view and you're kind of limited to that terrain, right? So that kind of went on hiatus during the recession. It was kind of an extra thing for the company, right? And then in 2016, we kind of started looking at it again. Maybe we should look into the visualization aspect. Like I said, pet project, cool thing to do. Got into some CGI work, like movie quality stuff, which looked really amazing. They looked pretty much like photos, like the movies do, but you kind of had to do them as one-offs. You couldn't explore them, and they took, all night to render one image. And then if something was off, then you're looking at another night, right? So scaled down, we looked at, I don't know if you're familiar, Kevin, the FVS growth
Forest
software we
Vegetation
used in Vegas.
Simulator, yep.
Exactly. And then that has SVS along with it, the stand visualization tool, which is a little, I think it's about a 4-acre plot. That's what we think it is. Shows some trees on it. They're kind of just 2D trees. They'll grow in a little space. Maybe shows you some spacing. Hasn't been updated since probably early 2000s. So we thought that's a nice little chunk. People are already working with that with FVS. That's probably a nice palatable piece of software for the industry as kind of a first public release, right? So worked on that for some time. In 2020, we released Stand Designer to the public, which is our current public-facing product as a company under the Visual Forester name. It takes place over 4 acres. We have incorporated a lot of different import methods into that, including FVS itself. We can just take in that database. We can take in a Canadian growth model from BC, as well as just stand tables, any kind of plot information, or you can build it all in the app. And that's really how we got our start populating that. We can show change over time. I can get into more details on that later. And that is really our visual forester motto model. We're also getting into Pro now, which is larger scale, which I'll get into as well. And then we're also working on IntelliFor, your third prong of that question, which is our newest platform we're working on. It's a forest project management platform. We're really trying to make the whole process to forest management kind of easier, more community-driven, more transparent. You know, almost think of it as like it's tax season, TurboTax for a timber harvest plan. Kind of streamlines the whole process. You can create, organize a team. You can upload and edit your GIS layers, auto-populate your documents, bring in specialists. We've got all kind of analysis tools in there as well. So that's kind of how our whole ecosystem is set up. So hopefully that encapsulates that one.
Yeah, no, that's a great summary or overview, I should say. So really fascinating. So the founder of the company you had mentioned was forestry and computer science. I'm not sure to date I've met too many that follow those two paths, because on one side I want to do the forestry so I don't have to talk to anyone. I could just go to the bush and like talk to my trees, or I'm gonna nerd out on my computers and hardware and software and stuff. And so to have someone kind of study both is quite unique, I believe. And so thinking of these products, is it a fair statement that a lot of the drivers behind these are coming from the company's own experiences and its day-to-day work, whether on the private lands or other things?
Yeah, I think that's completely fair. Yeah, we've really, especially for IntelliFor and Visual Forester, that's really been driven on what we've seen from the private side and also talking with the public and the tools that they need to really help kind of respond to our core mission of getting the good work out of what the forestry industry is doing. We think it needs a lot of positive message on the good work that's being done in the woods, and it's kind of our project to help bring transparency and that message to the public.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's kind of funny. I had just done a pod with another person in this theme of, foresters telling their story so that it's not being told by others. And often when it's told by others, it's told poorly and not in the best light, and truthfully not representative of the sector or the practice as a whole. So I'm gonna deep dive, if you're cool, on the forester side, because again, you're the product manager on it. So I'll try, and I have other questions I'll bring up
Yeah, absolutely.
on around IntelliFor and
Yeah.
other things. But my first question, I guess, is your title is product manager. What is a product manager? Are you a project manager, or is it something different?
I
I
think
know
it
you've been asked this
overlaps with,
tons of times, right?
it overlaps with project manager pretty heavily, but since it's a product, not a project, we'll call it product manager is kind of where that came from. I think it fits more with kind of the tech and software development side of things, as I oversee the development, right, on a high level. We have a lead developer for the real coding and nitty-gritty side of things. I just kind of help with direction, as well as I work with our clients to collect feedback on our application. I work with customers for custom visualization projects we do on public and private projects, and that also helps inform us of what features we need to build in the application. So I think I'm kind of the bridge between marketing, public facing, going to conferences, getting word out, and then the development side of things and making sure those are syncing together in a way that makes sense moving forward.
For sure, for sure. And thinking, you mentioned the public private for Visual Forester, is it tilted in a certain way in terms of your customers or clients more being more on one camp or another?
That's a great question. I think it probably tilts more public. Definitely on the larger scale, it tips more public currently, as they see a lot of the public I don't want to say pushback, but need for review and oversight and transparency on these projects. And they're looking for a tool to help, communicate their work they're doing. On the private side of things, I mean, we definitely do have private users, and we've done private projects. It's just more of kind of one-on-one with one customer compared to trying to get the message across to the broader public. They usually know who they're kind of pitching the harvest or whatever plan they're making on the private side versus the public. They kind of have to make the visual make sense to everyone, right? Really convey the message better.
Right. And so we think about the product. I know when you provided the overview, you touched on, the ability to import different things, but is it a fair statement that Visual Forester is more focused on visualization and maybe less simulation?
Yeah, that's entirely fair. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we try to be the visualization front of work that people are already doing, whether that's growth models or the GIS. We always pride ourselves on trying to make it as easy as possible to get data you're already working with into our platform. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel on your inventory or your growth models. We just want to read it in and make it as seamless as possible. So right now we read in from FVS, we read in TAS from BC. We'll take in stand tables. If you have an individual tree map, we can take that in if you've derived that from LiDAR or something. We really just want to display the work that you're already doing to help communicate that. And then if the work you're doing has a time element, we really enjoy showing the change over time as well. And that really helps communicate a much larger picture for the industry, we think.
Right. And so thinking of the product I hate to use the word IP, but is the IP in the visualization, or is it the whole tree library, if that's the right word, or species tree library, or I guess where I'm going is when I think about visualizations, and I looked at the website, I didn't deep dive too far, but you mentioned the 2.5D. I'm used to seeing those where they're kind of cartoony maybe, but then looking at some of your stuff on the website, I don't want to say photorealistic if that's the right word, but it was way better than what I had seen
Thank
elsewhere.
you. Yeah.
So thinking of your product, like is it the visualization engine that's a secret sauce, or is it the library, the tree library, and when you grow it, it's got science behind it, or maybe your background as you talked about horticulture and the landscape design, or is it a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. I would say it's the entire pipeline is really the IP that we hold for Visual Forester, because we build it in a unique fashion that I haven't seen any other visualization software, especially in our industry, build it in, is that we're using a game engine, which helps us go so large scale, lets us get the detail, but still render at a decent enough rate and be explorable in real time compared to just rendering out images like most software will do. I mean, a
Right.
key differentiating factor is we can go into drone mode and fly around the forest. We can go into walk mode and walk around. And then, as far as the pipeline itself goes, how we import the GIS information, the stand tables is all unique to us. And then, a really key element is that tree library that you mentioned. Like I said, when I started off, I came into the platform just building the tree models and the plant models. We spent a lot of time getting that, pseudo photorealistic look that you're used to from our product. We go out, we take images of the bark on the trees themselves for all the individual species we have in the application, as well as the leaves. And then we build out the tree models on every size class. So every tree isn't just scaled up based on the species. It's actually can look like it's one tree growing because we change the form at every different DBH. So that way you get that real organic look and it looks like a real forest rather than a bunch of scaled trees where, the redwood's the same when it's 4 feet tall and 52 feet tall and then so on. So we put a lot of time into our trees to really add to that realistic effect. And I think that attention to detail really comes across in making the different stands look like those specific areas, right? So.
And so how long I'm sensing that That effort was probably a labor of love. I'm sensing it
Yes.
wasn't like, oh, it took me like an hour to do this. I'm sensing field work and then modeling, the visual tweaking, like
We
maybe
have years into these
describe.
trees. Yeah, we
Wow.
have a lot of time into the trees. Yeah, I mean, it was a full-time job for me and another person for a very solid amount of time to get the detail right and revisions when people, I'm not a real forester. I'm right out kind of an outsider in the industry, but when real foresters look at it and critique the trees, we'd make the adjustments when we were still building them. And now we think the species really comes across cleanly with our end product.
Yeah, so thinking of that, like geography matters, and again, based on your studies, you would know that. The tree model is like, what can you visualize anything? Like if we go to eucalyptus plantation in South Africa, has Alpine Land Information Services sent you on the business class ticket over to Johannesburg and then do a safari first before you go do some recon and photo work? But like, what's the limit in terms of forestry, the types of trees and species and sizes?
I'm going to go on a little tangent because you mentioned eucalyptus and I have to share the story. We have eucalyptus because we actually did a project with Cal Fire out in the, it's called the Casper 500 out on Jackson State Demonstration Forest, where everyone listening is familiar. And they have a very strangely mature eucalyptus stand that's about 100 years old in that forest from a windbreak they planted for an orchard that got away from them.
Really?
So we were able to get a lot of eucalyptus photos and test images and build out a full library of eucalyptus. So that's our only exotic we have. I will say that internationally we have the eucalyptus. Ironically, since you brought it up, that's ready to go. Outside of that, we say we have pretty good visual coverage for all of North America and arguably a good chunk of Europe as well, based off of what we've built. So we have, I want to say it's about 32 species built out visually right now, ranging from conifers to hardwoods. And with that, we obviously have all those unique models. And then we are also able to visually sub in the nearest lookalike to that species based on your inventory. So if there's two different types of maples and we have one but not the other, we'll sub in that maple, or we'll sub in a similar oak or conifer, et cetera, pine. And that usually gets us coverage to where at least to, a fairly untrained public eye, it'll look right? Because they're used to just, oh, it's a maple, or even it's a hardwood. So we think our coverage visually works across the whole country. We've used it across the whole country. We've also used it for some kind of, I'll call them experiments over in Europe, and it seems to pass the sniff test over there as well.
I was going to say you could have endless fun just injecting random trees into the scene and see if anyone actually
See if
picks it
they
up. Even a
notice.
trained forester, right? See if they pick it up and go like, "Wait a minute, what's that doing there?"
Yeah, a little test.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a dream job. It's like, "Hey, boss, I need to go add a species to the library. See, I'm going
Yeah,
to
see
Indonesia
ya.
or something, right? And I'll be back in 6 months. And here's a picture of me on the beach. That's
Hey, if
super
any timber
cool."
companies in Indonesia want to call and fund us to go out of their trees, let me know. Fly out
Well, there you are. Our audience, believe it or not, is
tomorrow.
global. It even surprises me when I look at the map. Everyone's all over the place. You never know. Someone might
Could
call after
happen.
seeing your website there. And so you mentioned the gaming engine. I know one that's popular. You always hear about Unity, but like some of that stuff is like pretty hardcore complicated, not only from like a math point of view and like, so is that stuff you as a product manager does, or you have a technical team that kind of nerds out on that front?
We've got a technical team, and you nailed it with Unity as well. So yeah, our development team will do the core, the math and the tricky coding that I'm not equipped to do. I'll kind of map out what we need to do, what the inputs will be from, a GIS or even just a, spreadsheet perspective, and then what the user experience kind of needs to look and feel like. But then they tackle what I consider to be the hard part of actually coding that into Unity.
Yeah. And so I'm going to ask the dumb question, and I suspect you'll be like, Kev, that's like FAQ, frequently asked question number two or three. But a lot of GIS has visualization capabilities. And so how many times when you talk to Forcers, do they ask that question of like, why would I need Visual Forcer? I already have ArcGIS Pro as an example, or something else. What's the, I suspect you have a pre-canned response. Actually, I think I already know what the response is, but how often do you hear that question? And then two, give me the pre-canned response back to that person.
Honestly, it doesn't go too much because they've exhausted what they're able to do within like ArcGIS Pro.
Okay.
Right, their visuals can take you a certain distance, right? But you don't get the realism in the trees and the change over time with the precise inventory and really the forestry specific tools and distribution we're able to do is just, it's not there in Pro yet. I mean, if you really want a really pretty DEM and some textures and stuff on them, then yeah, it works, but you don't get the, the nice sales pitch image that we can give you or the video output we can give you.
Right. And so you said a lot of the visualizations on a 4-acre basis, and I think you had mentioned that previous products were at the 4-acre, yours is at the 4-acre. Is that a technical constraint, or is that a forestry principle approach, or where's that 4-acre
So,
definition come from?
yeah, that was a constraint in Stand Designer. Right now, we released that in 2020. Right now, we're nearing alpha release of Pro. So, Pro is really the next step in the evolution for us. That one's going to be limited to, we hope, 10,000 acres, 4,000 hectares. So, we're going landscape scale. Based off of feedback we got from Stand Designer, where people wanted more direct GIS imports, they wanted larger terrains, they wanted to import their own DEMs. So we're taking all that into account. We're going larger. We're importing a lot of really easy to use GIS imports where people can just drag in their point slayer, their shape, and populate it with a stand table. So the constraint now we think is blown 4 acres out of the water, and we're going really large because the name of the game is really visual impact assessments, we think, at this point. And those are becoming more and more prevalent and required, kind of across the board from what we're seeing.
Yeah, definitely. I know a couple of years ago, I heard about the importance of visual impact assessments, and from the public point of view, what does it look like? To some extent, I'm like, are we just hiding so that they can't see it while we're doing the work? I don't know. At one point, you mentioned CGI, so computer generated graph. Wait, CGI, computer generated. What's the I stand for?
What is it? CGI, computer.
Generated.
You stumped me with this one. Now I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, there we go. We need a
Computer
big
generated.
Siri moment. Computer generate
Yeah.
something.
Yeah, right.
And you mentioned it would take a long time to render. And so thinking of when you started doing this to now, how's the technology landscape from your seat? I'm really curious on this answer because typically with our digital foresters, it's kind of the same recipe where, GIS has evolved, GPS evolved, remote sensing has evolved, blah, blah, blah. And I say blah, 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 not in a bad way, as opposed to there's a recipe to there. But because you're coming from a different point of view, that's more, that gaming side, that visualization side, like it's almost a different thread, or what I would think is a different thread. But can you describe how that landscape has changed from maybe when you started school to what the art of the possible is now?
Computing power has really changed a lot. We're able, I mean, computers or graphics cards just keep getting better, right?
Yeah.
The availability of, what's on your base laptop now is very different than it was, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. We aimed for Stand Designer to be able to run on any business grade computer post 2016. So we'd really tried to keep the bar pretty low for people to be able to download and use it. Obviously, Pro will be more intensive, but, and I mean, beyond graphics cards and, at your desk computing power, I think cloud computing is also definitely going to change the game. And that's something we're actively looking into because the ability to render off the cloud now, I mean, you can go, the possibilities are not nearly as limited as they used to be, where, used to tell people, you have to have this graphics card, you have to have, this amount of RAM on your device. Now, cloud computing, it might be, run it through a browser. So, We're looking at that. That has strong potential, but I'd say cloud computing and then what just comes stock on devices is really the two biggest changes.
So should I speculate that if you wanted to, that you could retire FIRE style on your 60-foot yacht because you bought NVIDIA stock before all this graphical GPU technology took off, and you're laughing for those who can't see Andrew right now. We're both probably laughing because we're like,
That would have
yeah,
been
absolutely. Sprinkle a
nice,
little
right?
Bitcoin in there
Yeah,
and
it should have been
your
good,
uncle.
right? The
Yeah.
time machine going back,
There
invest
you
what
go. There you
very little
go.
money and
So
make something.
I do have a duh moment since while we were talking on the side, I was just kind of Googling CGI. So computer generated imagery, we were probably
Imagery. The
kind of just
imagery
on
is the
the
word. Yeah,
hot
right on
spot,
tip of our
right?
tongue.
Exactly. Sweating it away there. So I'm curious to pick your brain on if I pull you forward maybe 10 years, as you're describing this visualization, some of the things you're planning as product manager for Visual Forester. I just can't help get this sense of the usual buzzwords around digital transformation, but if I kind of pull that concept further and say, the digital twin of force, where do you think we are in terms of ch getting to a place where we can truly represent the forest for maybe, let's say, all the commercial elements that are required? Because again, forest is a terrain, there's a hydrology component, like where do you stop? There's a lighting component, et cetera. But maybe for like commercial foresting, we think about trees, where they are, their sizes and doing things and running simulations on them. What does digital twin to me mean to you in your world and your work right now?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, as far as digital twin, I'll start with where we're at in terms of digital twin and then where I hope we can be at in the future. So right now we're tracking every individual tree in the digital twin, its exact location. If it grows, we keep it in that same location. We're tracking all the biometrics, height, DBH, biomass, et cetera, of that exact tree. If we cut it, the stump remains there within the twin. All the terrain is, all the best available DEMs. Usually we're just pulling public DEMs, but private clients often have better that we'll pull in. So to me, that's what the current digital twin looks like. You can add in there, understory roads, et cetera. In the future, I mean, yeah, hydrology would be great to bring in. That's something we're actively thinking about. Soil conditions under the hood could be an interesting component of that. Where I really see a lot of opportunity in the twins is what data you need versus what data we actually store. I think we're storing a lot of the necessary data already for what we need on the visualization front. So, kind of what interests me a lot is more ease of use automations going into the future for the product. Obviously, the easier it is to create that twin, the better it is for users in general. So just quality of life things we're automatically pulling from publicly available data sets to just auto-populate a stand on any shape you bring in is really where I think the value will be, as well as auto-populating, roads, streams, et cetera. I think a lot of the sources are already there. It's just kind of correlating them all together and placing them down. We've already got a system in where we can auto-populate any trees in North America from a tree map data set from the Forest Service, which is really cool. Obviously, that's just one data set. So I think if you layer in multiple, you can only get a better and better result to kind of get that auto population system in. But that really interests me going forward on the digital twin front. I think adding in more data is great. And if it's usable data, absolutely. But just in terms of speed of the application and how big of a database you want hiding behind it, I think deciding what's really important is just as important as stuffing everything into it.
Yeah. Would there ever be a use case of where someone, let's say, is out in the bush and decides to use a handheld LiDAR to collect, use SLAM LiDAR to create a three-dimensional point cloud to help guide your model? Like, or is it kind of like, you know what? have my tree models are so good. Whatever you give me, I'm already close enough. I stared at this enough times. But are there any odd use cases or weird input pathways that you've seen that kind of surprised you?
We haven't done anything with direct, like cloud into creating a model. We always take the cloud, get the metrics for the DBH height, apply a species and location, and apply it to our terrain that way, rather than kind of colorize the point cloud, if you will. In the future, I mean, it'd be pretty. They're doing great stuff with like those NRFs models and stuff, where if you photo scan a tree, if you could just automatically make a model of it and then use it on our app, I think that would have a lot of value. Of course, there's going to be a lot of optimization that would have to happen to that model in the back end to be able to scale it up to the scale that we're working with. It's really just limits of scale and power for being able to create those models on the fly and then populate them out, because we're always balancing optimization with realism, and that's where those two kind of come to a head. So scale will always be a factor.
Is there a sweet spot when you say balancing out, or optimizing, trying to find that sweet spot? Is there one there that through experience you've kind of found, you know what, if we're talking about, and I'm probably using the wrong terms, but I come from pixels and voxels, but from a scale point of view, is there a certain part where you already know where, you know what, if you try and drive to this ground sampling distance or some XYZ measure that forget it, it's just not going to perform? Or is it more simply, hey, go buy a ginormous GPU card and problem solved?
Yeah, we're pretty set on the location and the scaling, and those numbers are pretty easy to operate with scale. And then obviously the graphics card always helps going bigger. But a lot of the optimization is in how you actually render the model themselves. So you use different quality of trees based on how close to the camera it is. And that's really the key for, at least in the game engine, to get that clean render throughout while keeping it optimized. So the trees in the distance will have a lot less, like you said, pixels, polygons in the gaming world than the ones near you. And that kind of helps create that illusion while still creating a smooth runtime environment.
Very cool, very cool. And as you describe that, I just can't help but think, I was reading some things on social media the other day, and I guess in Scandinavia, if you're a machine operator or some or whatever it is, a harvester forward, or you actually go to school like multiple years to train to operate these things, versus North America, I think we're trying to build similar programs,
Think
but
so.
maybe there's less rigor. But part of that training, I know I've seen a lot of these manufacturers have simulators, and it just kind of popped in my mind where the ones I've looked at, maybe a
Not as
score a
pretty.
D, maybe
Yeah.
B. I'm being generous, right? So as you're describing yours, I'm like I feel like your stuff could look wicked cool in some of those simulators. Has any of those manufacturers approached you in Visual Forester to say, hey, can we use some of your tech to create our training materials?
It's we'd be open to it. They have not, no, not on the equipment side. We haven't experimented with any training within, like, I know you're talking about like the cab simulators, right? Where you're actually in there operating the machines. We haven't talked to them about simulating that at all. We have been working on the other side on cruising simulating though. So you can actually go in, you can measure your plots, and then you can kind of practice within our applications, both variable and fixed radius cruising, which is kind of as far as we've gone on the simulation front, but I think an equally important part of the industry.
Yeah, for sure. And so Apple, I was going to say recently, not so recently, but they announced their headset. Everyone has
Bro.
one. Yeah, HoloLens 2, HoloLens 1. I think I still have a HoloLens 1 in my home office collecting dust. But oh, the whole augmented reality, virtual reality, is all hyped up. Actually, no, I have friends who just bought some VR headsets this past Christmas. But how does that fit into your world? Is there some overlap or connection or some interwoven plays that could exist with what Visual Forester is for these AR and VR spaces?
Yeah, I think absolutely. It's definitely in the I would call it more of the long-term vision than the short term, but It's, we already have the virtual environment created, so it's kind of just adding another camera in there to let you walk around in VR. So we are thinking about it. I think it eventually will come into play. It's just not a an initial core pillar that we're trying to work on, but I mean that space just keeps kind of growing and adjusting to the market. So I think it's kind of starting to settle in, especially with the more focus on AR rather than VR. So I'm kind of interested to see how that pans out, but I think it is definitely in the pipeline for VF.
Very cool, very cool. And so thinking of VF and pricing, not looking for maybe exact things, but for a forestry company or an organization that buys Esri technology, is your price points in line with Esri technology, or is it much, much more? I gotta sell my third child or something to get in and do this. Well, what can you share on that front for our audience?
Yeah, so StandDesigner, our 4-acre one that's commercially available now, the small scale one, that one's available now. I think it's 89 a year, so way, way, way less than Esri. That one's kind of priced to just get people playing around with the idea of visualization in forestry and kind of let people try it out, right? And then Pro will be more of that professional price point that you're thinking about. We haven't settled on definitive pricing yet, but it will be more priced as a professional type of software.
Right.
And we think that's in line with its capabilities of the larger scale GIS focus and more of the just the professional mindset of the use cases.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And so thinking when you're talking, because as product manager, you're out there talking with your customers as well as your prospects, is there something that you hear time and time again, back to the FAQ set of questions, maybe like the top three that you can share with us where you're just like, okay, I can fit this prospect or that I'm about to meet, and guarantee they're gonna ask these three questions because that's just the they're that ideal customer profile. They're always gonna come up with these questions. But what are some common things you hear and can share with us and maybe dispel some of maybe some common even some common myths that people think about?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your first profile is definitely the person that has all of their own exact specific data and they want to use that DEM, that inventory. Can I just automatically import that right into the application and see it? I mean, the short answer with Pro, yes, that's exactly what we're building it for. And then filling in gaps in your inventory where they have heights, can it still place? Yes, we can do that. So that's kind of the first common user is, can I use all of my own data? And the short answer is yes, yes you can. Then it's forestry, and I don't want to say it without saying it, but some people don't want to adapt to technology too quickly and they're hesitant, and that's perfectly,
You can say it as it
fine.
is. It's a digital forester
Yeah,
podcast. We've
yeah.
all said it. So, yeah.
So, we have the hesitant crowd that thinks it's going to be very difficult to learn. It's another tool. How will it work with what I'm already working with? Will I be able to figure it out? And that's where I kind of point to our easiest import methods of, hey, are you already using FES? Then you click one button and your database is into it. Hey, do you already have a stand table? Then you upload your stand table. You, in all likelihood, already know how to use Excel, so you can save that table and hit a button in ours and import it. Obviously, we have features that go far beyond those features, but if you just want to get started and you're scared about all the details and you see it can do so much more than you're ready for, we do have, some quote unquote easy buttons to get you started and see data quickly. And if that's all you want to see is just your FES runs, then you're more than welcome to just only use that button and choose the plots and choose the years. But I think once you're comfortable, you'll probably, start putting in some understory and using our screenshot and video tools as well. So we try and help, ease the concerns of the difficulty of use that way. And then you have your very busy people where they don't even want to think about learning a new tool. They just want the result. Will we do it for them? And yes, we have done custom projects. We are open to doing it that way where you'll give us the data and then we will turn that out into a video or a final project, and we'll come, we'll see the ground, we'll construct and then give you an end product. We can do that as well. With the release of Pro, I think we'll have to do that less and less as users themselves can go that large scale. Previously, we were the only ones internally building out large scale models, but with Pro, anyone will be able to do it. And I think that'll help curtail some of the need for the custom projects and help enable people to do the projects themselves. But I think those are kind of your three most common people that come to us.
Very cool. And thinking of that, I'm sure when if your technical people were to listen to this and hear you say custom and they do it, they would probably go, "Well, yeah, you're our product manager. No, we don't have time for custom. We got to focus on our features and our product. What are you doing? You're killing us." And usual dance
The
there,
usual,
right? But
yeah, that's why, hey, we want to build pro, right? So we don't have to do as much custom and we can focus on, features everyone can use rather than a one-off, right?
yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So as we kind of think about things going forward, I'm just fascinated and I'm curious to know your thoughts. Are there other sectors, like obviously you're focusing on forestry and intentionally given the owner, the founder's background. But if you're to pick, if your team, you and your team and Alpine were to pick a different sector, is there a logical one that you'd go like, oh, duh, we would just go to, I don't know, like household landscape design or something of that nature. Is there one, or is it really, you know what, we've invested so much time, effort, money, resource into this that it's really specific to forestry and that's our niche?
Realistically, our niche is really forestry. I mean, we thought it'd be mostly on the industrial and kind of focus on Western forestry with a lot of the thinnings and fuels reductions projects. But we've kind of started to see a lot more of, I don't know if you can even call it reforestation, as more forest creation projects that we've seen come up as well as, kind of new carbon projects where they're trying to create forests and I don't know if you could call it reclaimed farmland or something. That's kind of an interesting one where kind of creating from nothing isn't something we initially planned on, but it's something it works super well for. So that's kind of a fun new lane. We have had multiple people ask us, though, about using it for golf course design. So that's your outside of the box one.
Interesting
Yeah.
golf course design.
Or golf course. I guess golf courses need a lot of maintenance in the woods around them, or there's times they'll cut trees out, so people are interested in it for that. But golf courses has been the outside one. Yeah, that's your outside the box pick.
Well, if you're a golfer, then that's probably like music to your ears. It's like, hey, again, I'll go do the field work there and swing a couple irons while we're at it.
It has me nervous. It's a lot of new stuff that I don't know too much about on the golf course side of things and new features I don't think about. So I'm focused on forestry for the years to come, but who
There you
knows?
go. There you go. And you mentioned carbon. Like, does carbon, like, aside from the context, but for you guys, does like a tree that grows is gonna grow, whether it's a carbon project versus some other harvesting project or something, like, does that really matter to you?
In short, no, not really. We're already tracking biomass, so it
Yeah.
doesn't really. I mean, in a way, our program's so agnostic to what it's doing in terms of the forest that it doesn't really matter what's going on in the forest. We can show it either way. So carbon's just the same difficulty as any other project, and we're already tracking biomass, so it's pretty easy to watch that number go up.
Yeah, so maybe a far left field question. And the only reason I asked is one of my colleagues, he did a master's in not visualization, but maybe a supply analysis and the effect of the impact of climate change. Is that something you've heard asked for in terms of, maybe what's growing at this particular area isn't going to be suitable? And is that, has there been any interest in visualizing that progression of forest resources and where they're best suitable? Have you bumped into that at all?
I would say it's kind of parallel to that concept. There's a lot of the restoration forestry that's happening out west where they're trying to kind of restore the forest to historical conditions, kind of pre-settlement. So
Okay.
people are doing research into, what did it look like in the 1800s before pioneers came in and harvested everything. And now, going forward, what would it look like as a progression to get back to that? So, we've done some videos where we show a historic condition We show current conditions, and then we'll show kind of what, with the right management plan, it could look like in the future with kind of the return of certain fire regimes or harvest methods to kind of restore that quote unquote natural balance that they're seeing in the historical data.
Right. So if I was to pull your mindset even further, let's say 50 years out, I've gradually gone further and further because I tried 10 and people are like, that's not long enough, or I don't stretch your thinking far enough. But if I was to pull your brain 50 years out, and let's say you are now senior product manager of Visual Forester in that time frame and realize all the success, and to add a secret mix in there for fun. Your boss said, you know what, Andrew, it's like we got unlimited resources. We killed it with Visual Firster, the pro, and like all this stuff. It took off. You have unlimited budget to do what you want. Be creative. If I pulled the old 50 years, what would the Visual Forester product look like? Are there certain killer features you're just like, I so want to do it? Because every product manager has that bag of things they want to do. And either the development team's like, no, it's too complicated, or this will cost us a Lamborghini. We're not doing it because we have paying jobs. But if I was to pull your mindset out 50 years, what would the product look like from you? And are there any specific technologies you're just like, ooh, these are so close I could launch it even further beyond what I have now? But what could you share on that front with your thinking?
50 years early in spaceland here. Wow, you could probably just choose any point on a map, I would imagine. Pull any, I mean, with the way LiDAR and aerial imagery and I mean any imagery is going, you can probably choose any point, get the exact twin from the cloud. And then I mean with AI, probably just type in a prompt of what you want to do, and then it'll just automatically switch that model, right? I mean, it'll probably just be typing in a location, drawing a shape on it, and then writing what you want in a prompt. And I would imagine that's as far as any user would have to input in the future, right? I mean, stuff's already getting pretty close in some industries.
Yeah, and I'm wondering your library of trees, does that become like this diamond that just needs to be polished? Because again, a lot of these AIs and these large language models and other types of generative AI, they have to train off of something to be able to reproduce that. So I'm ever curious. Something I've been thinking about is everyone's focused on the technology, but is it content that's ultimately going to be king to drive a lot of these
It
generative
is kind
AIs?
of a good training library for other tools. I will say that we are, people have asked about that, and I think it is, it's helpful for that. So that is, at least in the near future, I think a helpful thing is to have this detailed library of all the different tree sizes that we can just, you know, generate simulation environments on the fly with. So I think I kind of took a tangent from that question, but.
No, that's the intent of the question. So thinking of the other Alpine business units, and again, I know you're not the manager, you represent them. Is there anything from those products that is worthwhile that sharing with the Digital Forester community? Is there something on the IntelliFor product roadmap that's worthwhile? Maybe there's some synergies with Visual Forester, I don't know. But anything to share on that front?
Yeah, I think IntelliFor is very relevant. Like I said, it's really a new platform for forest management where we're trying to help, you know, build a community-focused platform with a lot of transparency on that front. I think I already got in the tools for the GIS and mapping and documents, but we are going to be directly linking with Visual Forester within that too. So it's kind of a nice all-in-one for kind of the Alpine public-facing suite within IntelliFor, where you already have your project in there, you're tracking it in there. Now you can also visualize it in there with the click of a button. Just make the twin and output that, show it to the public, and communicate it that way. We're also building a lot of kind of an open-source environment for analysis tools in it, so anyone can put in whatever tools they want for a job. I know we already have one cool one in there where it does like one click carbon feasibility analysis for certain areas within that platform, as well as we're looking at kind of a gig economy type element. I know it's kind of, gig economy is kind of a scary word right now, but looking to help kind of prop up some rural communities where some of the industry is and provide some jobs there by directly, you know, funneling to some local workers, which we think could have
Interesting.
a good good benefit to the rural economy because, they need some help with, the changing economy. So I encourage people to check that out. We'll definitely be putting more information out on that. The website's out right now, and then Visual Forester will be a direct kind of component of that as well as being a single standing application.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. Well, hey, I enjoyed talking with you, and as we look to wind down, the time has flown by. I've totally
Oh, yeah.
mesmerized talking with you and learning about what it is you do. So for folks who have listened to this and are like, hey, I need to get a hold of this guy Andrew Davis from Visual Forester, what's the best way for folks to get a hold of you?
LinkedIn's cool. Andrew Davis on there. It's a pretty common name, so probably Andrew Davis Visual Forester if you want to actually find me on there, I'm guessing. Email is good as well. It's A Davis, ADAVIS, at alpine-lis.com. You can send stuff that way. Messaging on LinkedIn works great. And then, yeah, check out our website, visualforester.com. Or intellifor.com for that as well.
Are there certain conferences that you guys hit to demo this? And if so, what are some of those main ones you go? So if people want to intersect you, they can.
I think the next one I know is coming up that a lot of people attend is the SAF National Conference that'll be in Colorado in September. We'll definitely be there with a big presence for both Visual Forester and Intellifor to demo and show you what's going on there. I think that's the main one on the radar right now. We're looking at doing some more as, winter and spring rolls around. But you can reach out if you have a conference and think we'd be a good fit as well. We're always happy to talk. And then if anyone wants a demo, they can reach out as well and we can probably arrange that.
For sure, for sure. Very cool. The SAF is a good one. So hey, it was great meeting you, I guess. And
Yeah, great
first
to
and
meet you.
foremost, right? As I said, I enjoy the conversation. Just the hours just flown by. So I want to be respectful of your time. And
No problem.
we all got other stuff. I always joke the real job, and this is the fun. But hey, looking forward to maybe meeting you in person one day and learning more and seeing this technology at play. But thanks so much for creating some time for this guy today, and looking forward to seeing you around.
Absolutely. Look forward to it, Kevin. Thanks for having me.
Cheers.
Yeah.